Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine. We have Catherine Smith back with us. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
Yes, and always, as Tim's back with us. Welcome, Tim.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, well, been a big week in politics in Georgia and in other states. Just a little thing about the show. Later on tonight, we're going to have around the 7:30 Eastern hour, 6:30 for our friends in Central Time. Willie Banks, Colonel Willie Banks, who's running for Congress in Louisiana 4. That's an open seat. He's going to be our special guest tonight. And if you were tuning in and had heard about state party chair Jennifer Moore from Kentucky, she just called. Something's come up, but she was on top of it telling us, you know, to not plan for it, and we certainly appreciate that. But she said she'll come back with us another week. But she won't be on tonight, but we got plenty of politics to talk about because politics always move forward, and particularly in late August all the way through Election Day in November. But the Georgia runoff, and Tim, I don't know what you think, and Catherine too, I think the runoff election, as far as the results and everything, were a little bit more exciting than the actual primary. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I'll tell you, David, Jim Martin put a whooping on Vernon Jones. I guess I'm a little surprised by the gap. Did you expect 20 points?
I didn't.
Did you not remember my prediction? My prediction was Vernon Jones will not go up from what he got on Election Day, and he might have gone up a point. I mean, that was my prediction. I didn't think he'd go up, and he sure didn't. Catherine, your thoughts on, I guess, that top of the ticket race in the U.S. Senate?
I have to say I was surprised by the spread. I was expecting it to be. I mean, I thought Jim Martin would prevail, but I thought it would be a little tighter than that.
No. I mean,
I'm happy about it. I think it's good. I mean, I'm happy because I was a Jim Martin supporter, but also I'm happy that, you know, we did get a bigger turnout than anyone expected. I think partly because of the race in DeKalb and the sheriff's race in Fulton and some of the other races.
Well, and the whole Clayton County ballot. Tim,
yeah.
A little more on that.
Yeah, well, up in Chattooga County, David, we actually had within a point of having the same turnout that we had in the primary because we had two big runoffs, and it was a night of up people up here, if you heard.
I did. I was speaking to our congressional candidate, Bud Gammon, and he was on top of it. He told me that y'all had 39% turnout.
Wow.
And right.
He mentioned that there was a new sheriff.
There
in
is.
Town.
It was a night where youth was served. We've got a sheriff by the name of John Everett that's barely 40 years old that'll take office in January. And, you know, Chattooga is a one-commissioner system up here. And the county commissioner is a very powerful position in this county. And our nominee for the county commission is 29 years old.
Wow.
There was a street full of people beside the courthouse I have never seen before. 20-somethings and 30-somethings. A lot of new voters in the process. It was very exciting. And Jim Martin, by the way, got over 70% of the vote up here.
Yes, I mean, I did notice, you know, Jim Martin, he won everywhere, it seemed like. And that's just so interesting. In DeKalb County, Jim Martin did well, and even African-American precincts. And I kind of think that shows that the people that knew Vernon Jones best didn't like him. They were on
Well, I
to
think
him.
There were a couple things. I think that Dr. Reverend Joseph Lowry's very supportive endorsement of Jim Martin so
yeah.
close to the primary probably really helped him because he's a very well-respected, very wise man. and his endorsement was quite critical, I thought. Not, I don't think he actually named him by name, but he called out, you know, the fact that he had voted for Bush, and he was, and I think that, you know, we might not recognize the importance of that or the influence that he has, but in the African American community, he's very well respected and very, you know, people listen to him. And
well,
I think
it
that
shows
helps.
That this race transcended race. I mean, it was more about competence and who's going to be the better nominee. And by the way, speaking of, I voted for Bush twice. Every analysis I read, listen to, mentions that. And,
oh yeah.
And you hate to toot your own horn, but what can you do? I mean, we're the ones that broke that, kind of not even realizing we were going to break it. We asked Mr. Jones, and it just became this major thing in the race. Jim
well,
Martin
I also think
went on the attack.
I don't know, remember if we talked about this. I wasn't here last week, but I thought that in the debate, when he refused to say that he would endorse the Democratic nominee, whoever it was, I thought that hurt him too.
Yes, I mean, it fit into the petty, paranoid, you know, caricature
yes.
that he's so often described as. I mean, it just, and I saw an article today, what's next for Vernon Jones? I don't know what's next. I mean, there's better politicians that have lost and not, we hadn't seen back again. So I don't know that we're going to be seeing a lot of him. I mean, if he lost that race in DeKalb County, I just don't see any real upside. It's not like, oh, he could go get Hank Johnson now, or, oh, he could go, you know, win the DeKalb CEO another time. And I don't know if there's, you know, I don't know how the term limits are on that. I just don't see, you know, what the next move is anyway for him. So, but then that sets us up with, you know, Jim Martin's the nominee. And I can't wait for the first poll to come out, because I know, mirroring the North Carolina race, when Kay Hagan won that race, she got a bounce and really, I mean, closed that race from a double-digit race to a single-digit race. And now the DSCC is pouring lots of money in there, seeing as a target. If we see that same kind of bounce for Jim Martin, and this, I saw a poll recently, an 11% poll that was taken in late July. If he bounces that thing closes to 7 or 6 points, and Chambliss is, say, 3 points under that magic 50 number, could this be where then Jim Martin can turn his fundraising on and the national groups come in and turn their fundraising on and this really becomes a barn burner? Catherine, your thoughts on that?
I think that's very possible. And I think the other thing that we as Georgia Democrats need to do is remind everyone about the criticism that John McCain launched on Saxby Chambliss back in 2002, following those ads about Max Cleland. And I think if we can divide Chambliss and McCain, that we can – I think that would be – because I know – I mean, he's coming here next week. But he and Max Cleland were good friends. They worked very closely in the Senate. And he was very critical of Chambliss after those ads. So I think that that's another strategy that we can use to try to isolate – Senator Chambliss from the rest of the GOP.
Yes, and I do think it's a place where it makes attacking McCain on personal character issues a bit tricky, because if we attack every Republican that comes down the pike on personal, you know, biography type issues, it makes those attacks seem less effective. And I believe this is at least the presidential race. We ought to try to win this on issues and not worry so much about that, because I don't think McCain's a good target like Bush was. I don't think he's a good target like Chambliss is, and I do see some of that in the blogs, and I'm sure there are things you can pick out about anybody that's been divorced, but I just think that's the wrong tactic to use this time and then overuse in times. Tim, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, you know, I know a lot of people are wanting also to attack John McCain on the issue of his age. We shouldn't do that, David. People know that the man will be 72 later this month. That they can look. They don't need anybody to tell them that. If age is an issue with them, they've already got that in their minds. We don't need to attack him on his past supposed infidelity or whatever. I don't really care about things like that. Where John McCain should be attacked is on his connection with a very unpopular president who he voted with 95% of the time last year, and on limited votes when he's been in the Senate, actually 100% of the time this year. You join McCain to President Bush, you've hurt him in the worst possible way.
And that's policy. Catherine, your thoughts?
I think that's, you know, absolutely correct. I think that painting him as disconnected from the average American, not, you know, really understanding what struggles the average American is facing. And I think, he's got 10 houses. He, you know, was marched into the Air Force or the Naval Academy by his father. I mean, he's very elite. And I think we can highlight those things and his just lack of understanding of American problems.
Yeah, well, and I think that's, if we attack him as elite out of the box, there's no point in that. Now, if want to start saying Barack Obama is elite, an elitist, he's arrogant, he's uppity, whatever that may be, then that's where you can go, okay, look, this guy grew up in an apartment in Hawaii. This guy had this as a contrast. Now, I think that's a fair, you know, attack. So it's good as a retaliation, as an out of the box attack.
I agree with you. I think Senator Obama is very well recognizes the problems facing Americans and understands the necessary solutions, or at least approaches to the solutions. But I don't think McCain really has a connection to that.
And I guess
that's
the way
impression.
That they're trying to frame, and probably effectively so, somehow Barack Obama is being, you know, upper crust, if you will. They were able to do this with Bill Clinton early on, until Bill Clinton really got his bow out there. For some reason, a lot of Americans think that your average Democrat, if you don't know anything about them, is probably, you know, wealthy, went into some prestigious private school, lived in a gated community. I don't know where this comes from, but that's what people thought about Bill Clinton until they heard the whole Hope Arkansas story. That seems to be what a lot of folks think about Obama, until they're informed that, oh, no, this guy lived with his grandparents in an apartment.
Worked his way through Harvard. You know,
don't know these things until they're told. And I don't know why this is this preconceived notion, when in two cases, it's very far from the truth.
Well, it's because they recognize, I think the Republican marketing people recognize that those are his strengths, and that is where they always attack. They always attack the strengths. I mean, that's been their playbook for the last two or three cycles.
Yes, but attacking strengths where the strengths are, you know, like making something, but just trying to make something and make it just false, just creating a whole cloth. It's a totally different deal.
Let's be honest. The Republicans are very good at attack politics. As Senator Obama said, they're a lot better at attacking than they are at governing. And we know they're going to do this, and they're going to continue to do this all the way through this election. Senator Obama continues to lead in the polls. I'm sure they're getting a little frustrated because they're throwing everything kitchen sink at the man, and they can't blow by. This is where President Bush won the election 4 years ago. It was in the month of August. As a matter of fact, the last time I can think of when somebody didn't win the election in August was probably 1980, which this election reminds me of, by the way. I honestly right now believe that this election is all about Barack Obama. I do not think that there is anything that John McCain can do to either win or lose it. If the American people decide that they're ready to take a chance on Barack Obama, he wins. That's just the way I feel. I could be wrong, but that's the way I feel about it.
Well, and that's once again the Republican playbook. The last time an election's been about a candidate other than the Democratic candidate was probably 92. I mean, 96, it was obviously about Clinton because he was the incumbent. They made the election about Gore and then Clinton's baggage with Monica Lewinsky. 2004, in an amazing jujitsu, somehow they made that election a referendum on Kerry. don't ask me how, or at least they did among a certain
portion
of the
electorate. They attacked him on his strengths.
Yes,
they,
and so that
they made his strengths his weaknesses.
And I agree. This will be an election on Obama, and that mean. And then if Obama wins, then the re-election would be obviously. So it is interesting how the Republicans have done this, and it's helped them in all the elections except '96, and that was just
a situation where
they could do nothing else.
Still, there's a Republican in the White House. We know how the economy is going. We know how unpopular the war in Iraq is. At some point, the Republicans have to give some positive message to the American people. All I'm seeing so far is attacks on the other party. I just ain't so sure that's going to work this year.
I don't think it'll work.
I think talking about wearing out tactics, I think the old, oh, so-and-so's liberal and attacking, that stuff just doesn't work like it used to 20 years ago. I think Dukakis was the high watermark for that kind of politics.
It ain't going to work when people can't afford a decent house, when they can't find a job, when they're sick of that war, when they're sick of paying a small fortune for gasoline. People are angry, and the Republicans don't seem to realize that they are going to bear the brunt of a lot of that anger again.
Well, I guess sticking on the presidential election, but going specifically at a state, now in most of the southern states, which have been very, very red the last few cycles, Obama's doing better. If you look at Virginia, Georgia, North Carolina, Mississippi, all those states are better for Obama. You know, much, much better in some states. But one state where it's always a swing state in the South that Obama's seeming to lag is Florida. And I saw in today's Constitution, they looked at his approval-disapproval numbers, and his approval-disapproval numbers were much, much worse in Florida than they were in other swing states like Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania. Catherine, any thoughts on what's going on in Florida and what we can do to change it?
I really don't know. I hadn't seen those numbers, and it was kind of surprising.
The front page of today's Constitution had those, and I went ahead and recycled it already, but it's but it
oh,
had
I believe
them.
You. I'm not disbelieving it.
Yeah, it was. It's vexing to me. I mean, Florida's a diverse state, a high African-American population, a high Hispanic population. Hispanics have started coming to Obama. It doesn't make sense that he would be this far behind. It's almost like, you know, three out of every four whites are saying, I disapprove of Obama in Florida, as opposed to other states. Probably there's a bigger
David,
saying,
did,
I don't
what,
know.
What did their poll have the gap at being in Florida?
This was approval, disapproval, but Obama's not winning Florida, and you're the Mr. Real Clear Politics, can pull up the poll numbers faster than any of us on Florida, and if you do, tell us that number. But I'll tell you this, it was significant Florida, but that makes me think, is the VP choice, does he have to look at Florida to at least keep McCain really busy, and does that mean that two people in my mind come to mind for VP choice if you want to play in Florida? One's Bill Nelson, being from Florida, and the other is Hillary Clinton, who does so well with those New York transplants, Jewish women, Jewish voters in general, all those groups that are high in Florida that don't seem to be coming to Obama as fast.
Well, Hillary Clinton is still my pick of the litter to be the VP. You know that. But if I were Senator McCain, I'd pick the governor of Florida and get that state off the table. He has not closed the deal there, regardless of these approval-disapproval ratings. As a matter of fact, the present spread in Florida is 1.2 points. That is a poll of polls on Real Clear Politics, although the latest polls are showing McCain anywhere from 3 to 6 points up. I do know this, David. Obama does not need Florida to win, but I can't think of a scenario where John McCain can be elected without Florida.
Oh, certainly, but you got to think, if you're winning Virginia and Democrats have won Virginia since '64, if you're in play in Georgia, if you're in play in North Carolina, then why is Florida not a 7-point lead? I mean, knowing the demographics and everything else, it just seems so strange that it's not. And I mean, there.
So Florida was a big Hillary state?
Yes, she won the primary in Florida. That profile of, I mean, Jewish voters, and they, I mean, the Daily Show, even though it is half comedy, actually had a little thing where they sat down with Jewish voters, because of all the minority groups in particular, Jewish voters are the slowest to come around to Barack Obama. And could she be what brings those voters in? I mean, there's probably there's maps to the election without Florida and without Hillary Clinton if he really doesn't want to put her on.
Well, I think that unlike in most general elections, I don't usually think that the vice presidential candidate really makes that much difference. But I think it's going to be important on both in both parties this year. I think that we're going to have to hope that Senator Obama picks a really dynamic person who can campaign really well for him and who has a good record and has a good reputation. And I think, he's going to have to be careful not to pick someone who's too much older than him to highlight how young he is. And I think the same is true, only the reverse, with McCain. I think he's going to have to pick someone who's not way too young to highlight his age. I think it's going to be really interesting how that all shakes out, as well as the timing of it. Like, I'm just keep thinking that they're going to make the announcement, and they're not making any announcements. And now with the Olympics, I don't know if they're going to do it before the Olympics are over.
Well, the Olympics last almost all the way up to the convention. I believe it's 3 weeks. But it seems like they have to, that week of the 17th, is that week, I guess 17th is our show next week, that 18th, sometime in that week would make sense, because then you have the next week to have the convention. That way you can control 2 weeks' news instead of...
But picture this scenario, David. Bill Clinton speaks on Wednesday night of the convention. By this point, there has been no vice president named. The whole convention is going crazy. And at the end of his remarks, Bill Clinton then puts in nomination the name of Hillary Clinton. Now, would that be television?
It is a plan.
Would that be television or what?
Well, I mean, always the surprise is good. I mean, there's a person in pro wrestling, and he talked about his formula, Eric Bischoff, and he does other entertainment now, and he says a surprise is one of the key elements of any good entertainment formula. Because
right. It
builds up suspense, and you know, in politics, the one thing that is definitely missing these days, the way everything's so planned and the news cycles out there, there's really very little surprise these days. You know, I mean, if I had to guess, and I don't know what y'all can give y'all's guesses to, if I had to guess today who's going to be VP, I'd say Evan Bayh right now. And then if he becomes it, I'm not going to be surprised. Catherine, what's your thought?
Well, I have the same scenario in mind that Tim just described. I think that when they announced that Bill Clinton was going to be on, Wednesday, and Hillary's going to be on Tuesday night, and we don't have a nominee yet, that was the exact same scenario I thought of. And I am not going to really guess, but I had all but eliminated Hillary from the running. And I'm back in thinking that she might be it.
Well, and I think if the race stays tight, then I think he needs to really look at who can help me win, who can help me get votes. And then the Florida thing is part of that.
And who's got the energy to really help him campaign? Because he needs someone that is a very dynamic speaker.
And he gets
Let me ask y'all something.
Speakers.
Let me ask both of you something and answer me honestly. Which vice presidential pick could unify the party quicker than Hillary Clinton?
I don't think
none that I can think of.
There we go.
Yeah, I think
my pick.
Yeah. Well, I guess before Colonel Banks comes on in here, trying to talk about some other topics in Alabama too, a race that we're following very closely. That in South Alabama, Montgomery, the state capital, is one of the big cities there. We've had dueling polls come out. One poll had Bobby Bright, the Democratic mayor of Montgomery, with a 10-point lead. Now, that was his own poll. Then the Republican challenger, or the Republican candidate, Jay Love, had a poll showing both candidates pretty low. I believe it was Jay Love 40, Bobby Bright 39. So the polls were very different, not only in the spread, but also the number of undecideds they found. So if you average the polls together, you would see Democrat Bobby Bright winning this seat and being a Democratic pickup. Tim, any thoughts on these polls?
Okay. When you see a poll where both candidates poll pretty low and it's an in-party poll, what is normally missing? Why, it's leaners, right? I bet you even the Republican internal polls are not showing good news for their candidate when you add leaners. I think we got a chance to grab this seat, Dave.
And that's what Mooncat said last week. She said the bright Republicans, it's a real movement, and that's why Jay Love's so torn up about it. And I think you're absolutely right about the leaners. Catherine, any thoughts on these polls?
I think that's absolutely right. I think November's going to be fun.
You're talking about, I mean, that's Alabama, too. We're talking about, you know, the cradle of the Confederacy, Montgomery, Alabama. That seat going Democratic. I mean, in a year where you have a mixed-race presidential nominee, that's just amazing. That shows how much America and even the South is moving forward and how well the Democrats are doing.
Yeah,
Don't you think these things ought to just be scaring the hell out of the Republicans, the national Republicans right now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you're going, we've got to worry about – we had to worry about Mississippi and we lost it, and I don't even think we got a chance. They're probably saying we don't have a chance to beat Childers, and now we've got to worry about Ronnie Musgrove taking our Senate seat over there. And then now we're having to defend Alabama 2, and we're not going to have a chance at Bud Kramer, and we always thought we'd have a chance at that seat up in Huntsville. And then now in Georgia, they always, you know, they're number two, one and two targets always, Jim Marshall, John Barrow. I don't see any real traction for either of those Republicans. The guy running against Barrow, I don't know what that campaign's even doing.
And the thing is, David, remember this too, the National Republican Congressional Campaign Committee, they're broke. They don't have the money to spread around to the second district in Alabama or the first district in Mississippi or then 30 open seats that they didn't expect to be defending this year. I imagine they don't know which way to go right now. That money is going to be important, too, late in this campaign.
Oh, yes. And so, I mean, that's really, I mean, you can tell. And speaking of more money, we talked about it last week. There's another ad against Elizabeth Dole in North Carolina.
Yes.
That seat's, really becoming contested as well. Kay Hagan, just to see that could be a situation. And that's one of the last Southern Senate seats to switch because John Edwards switched, if not that exact seat, the other Senate seat, you know, about 10 years ago.
And a seat that shouldn't be in play. It shouldn't be in play.
Yeah, so we're just seeing lots of things. Well, I guess we'll probably pick back up this Georgia talk on the other side of our interview, but there were other elections in Georgia, and to me, even though, Tim, it sounds like Chattooga was about as fascinating, Clayton just had a few more races on the ballot. Clayton County just had a watershed election for their county. I mean, you had a ticket of candidates in the Democratic primary, Eldrin Bell, Kim Kimbrough, the district attorney candidate, the juvenile court justice, which her name escapes me, all kind of ran as a ticket. You have to think maybe Gail Buckner, even though she might not have been on the official ticket with those folks, that her vote seemed to fall in line with those three. And all four of those candidates won. Catherine, your thoughts on what happened in Clayton County?
Well, I'm just glad that they got rid of some of those people, and you know maybe things will get cleaned up down there. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know if y'all have been down there. The billboards, Victor Hill had these strange like billboards about crime, and he had this. It looked like, I mean, it was kind of like a Central American dictator. I mean, it had like all kind of pins and bars, and it had the lantern that you wear around your on the outside of your jacket, and he had one of those big hats that has a real ornate thing on the head. I mean, it was just very, you know, eaten up with power. And then you had the Scott family, who the husband and wife, the husband's been running for, gosh, three cycles now. And, you know, I guess he thought he could take on Eldrin Bell and take him down. And then his wife, the DA person who had never tried cases, who now, when she got down there, she would, like, they would have people do hard crime, and she wouldn't even file the paperwork appropriately to even get the cases prosecuted. So it was just really a big election there. And then I don't think Gail Davenport, the, I guess, current and soon former state senator, was quite like those folks. But then she went down, and Gail Buckner now returns to the Capitol, who's been serving Clayton County for, you know, years until she went to the ran for Secretary of State, and now she's back as a state senator. So that should, you know, provide some clout for Clayton County and the legislature, since it's pretty much a new team of folks in the last, say, 6 years. But I thought that was real interesting. Then getting over, and you, Catherine, I know you touched on the Fulton Sheriff's race, since you're in there and that's what you voted for. Tell us a little about that race.
Oh, my God. Well, I left town the day of the primary, the 15th, and I kept calling down here from Michigan, and Jerry was telling me that Myron Freeman was winning, and I just couldn't believe it, because the guy, I mean, he's just been a horrible sheriff. I mean, there's so many examples of bad management. But he, you know, he won decidedly, in the, but not enough to, obviously, so he had a runoff. And then he lost miserably last week, and I'm so glad, because and this Ted Jackson guy, I think he's going to be good. He was endorsed by the one candidate that I supported, as well as other candidates whom I respect very much. So I think that helped him. I think that also helped Jim Martin. We didn't talk about that, but I'm very relieved, because I was very worried if Mr. Freeman was reelected. I think he was bad. He was
yes. Well, I think we have our guest on with us, Colonel Willie Banks. Colonel, are you there with us?
Yeah, David, I am. How are you?
Excellent. I'm doing great, and you're also on with Tim Shiflett and Catherine Smith.
Welcome.
Hi, guys.
Good evening.
Yes, well, Colonel Banks, I've already kind of given a little bit of your bio right there, but you're running for Louisiana's 4th District. That's an open seat that was being vacated by a Republican, but it has a Democratic history as recently as the mid-90s, if I'm not correct. But if you'll tell us a little about your bio first off.
Well, as you are aware of, I'm retired military. I'm also an attorney. Make a long story short, I was an ROTC graduate in 1967 from a little university called Southern University in Baton Rouge. Went immediately to active duty and served as an infantry officer in Vietnam. Upon returning, decided to get out of the military and go to law school, but stayed in the Army Reserves, attended law school, completed that, practiced law for a brief period of time in New Orleans, and upon 3 or 4 years of doing that, decided to go back into the military, stayed in the military until such time as I retired, established a law practice again back in my home state of Louisiana, and was ultimately appointed as a Chapter 13 bankruptcy trustee in Louisiana for the Western District. And that's kind of the shortened version of a very long and blessed career.
Yes, well, you talked about on your website, and then I guess today you said you're a Vietnam veteran, and we're seeing a lot of that, particularly in the South. We've had candidates from Virginia. Almost, it seems like every candidate on the federal Georgia ballot this year is a veteran that's challenging the Republicans. We've seen it in some other states. And yourself, tell us about how you're military background fits into your run for Congress.
Well, there are several reasons why you're seeing a rise in the number of veterans who are running. First, if you're aware, at least as it relates to the congressional seats, such a small percentage of the sitting congressmen have had any military background whatsoever. In Congress, less than 25% is the number that we're getting. Therefore, in our opinion, and that's many of us who are running, we feel that in some respects they lack the necessary background to make some of the decisions and the judgments that they're trying to make. And that certainly doesn't make them any less well-intentioned, but it's our belief that we can be a voice in Congress for our fellow veterans. And if you were to expound upon that, certainly we feel, since we've been to war, we would be much more deliberate as it relates to making that move, and then we certainly would make the move in such a fashion that our troops would have everything that they need to be successful and accomplish their mission, and certainly we would want to make sure that they're well taken care of, and their physical as well as their emotional needs are met once they return back home. That's only one of the reasons that I think a lot of veterans are getting active, but again, recognizing that you have other people on your program, certainly someone else can feel free to pitch in.
Oh, yes. Well, we have a format, and I'm going to ask you one more question, and I certainly am going to pass it to Catherine and Tim for their questions. But one question also I was asked is, you've decided to put yourself forward for Congress. What prompted you to do this, and I guess beyond your military expertise?
Well, I'll tell you, and I now laugh when I hear the question, because anybody who's ever taken on this task, that's the first question that you ask by everybody that interviews you. And the answer has kind of become standard. I listen to other candidates, and in many instances, our answers are the same. We, like most of the individuals in this country, are fed up with what we see occurring in Washington, specifically the divisiveness, the party bickering. On both sides of the aisle, it's my opinion that they've become more interested in parties than people. So they're not going about the people's business. They're more or less going about the party's business, and very little is getting accomplished. Now, certainly that's one reason that I think many of us are doing this, and it certainly was a primary consideration of mine. Now, obviously, there are some favorite issues of mine, and I do attempt to address them on my website, and anyone can feel free to go in depth into those issues by going to the website at banksforcongress.us. And I deal with the issues in depth, specifically family values, the war, of course, we've talked briefly about that, the economy. As a Chapter 13 bankruptcy trustee, I've had a unique involvement with economics and the economy and how it affects the individuals. Health care is another issue that I've seen and looked at very closely. So when I compiled all these things that I was interested in, and I didn't see a heck of a lot being done, I was so inspired to run that I resigned from one of the most trusted jobs in the country, and that is being a Chapter 13 trustee, to do just what I felt we had been asking other people to do, and that is make the sacrifice, go out, and try to change things.
Sir, well, I'm going to go ahead and let Catherine Smith ask any questions she has for you.
Thank you so much for being on with us tonight, Colonel Banks. We really appreciate it. We always like to hear from other southern states and what's going on. And I did take a look at your website today. You have a very impressive resume and history. It's very, 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 very heartwarming to see someone with your stature running for Congress. I noticed that you did mention health care, and you just mentioned it again earlier. It's one of the things that I'm really concerned about as a 50-something person. And all my life we've been hearing about the importance of, you know, providing comprehensive health care for all of our citizens. And I just wonder what your ideas are about how we're going to accomplish that. And I also want to mention that I did look at the websites of the Republicans that are running for this seat. And just, I'm sure you know this, but none of them even mention health care to any great extent in their top issues. So
no, I participated now in several forums where all of the Republicans appeared, and to me it appears to be much of the same. And when I say much of the same, that's not necessarily negative, because they're talking about some of the things that count, family values, all of the things that bring up pro-life, all of the things that bring up a lot of emotions, but I think they're also missing a lot of the substantive type issues.
And what do you think are going to be our good ways of accomplishing some health care reform?
Well, first of all, as you said, you've looked at my bio, and I've been blessed. I'm retired military, and in most regards, my health care is taken care of for the rest of my life for what I'm going to describe as a minimal payment on a yearly basis for my family. But what I have done, you mentioned that you're 50-something. Well, I'm 60-something, and I've been a full-fledged member of the AARP. I was a 50-something, and they've come up with some, they've thrown out some excellent ideas. I've signed the pledge. I've observed that a lot of things that would have helped health care, even the incumbent to the seat that I aspire to attain, has been pro-industry, for lack of a better word, because he has the backing of all of the pharmaceutical companies. So when it was time to vote on reducing the price of drugs for seniors, obviously you know what direction he voted. So I think in that we're in probably, not probably, we're in definitely the most prosperous country in the world. I'm not a proponent of socialized medicine, but I am a proponent of affordable medical and health care for everybody in this country. Now, there are any number of things that that we can attempt to do, and certainly one of the things that even I deal with is the high cost of drugs. And the pharmaceutical industry obviously will fight that. The other thing that I see that we're definitely going to have to do, and you'll have an appreciation for this as you get older, is to make sure that the folks, those doctors that provide care for the Medicare patients are not forced out of the industry, as many of them are, because we're not at least paying them what I feel would be a fair amount of money. So there are a number of issues. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I've developed a plan that's a silver bullet or a panacea, but I'm willing to work aggressively with those members of the party from both sides of the aisle to make sure that we have affordable health care for all Americans. And as a small businessman, and I was that for 10 years as a Chapter 13 bankruptcy trustee, I've watched how difficult it is for us to assist, us being the small businessman, to assist our workers to have affordable medical care. Off the top of my head, just one thing that we could do for small businessmen is to give them some type of credit, some type of tax credit for subsidizing the medical care of many of our citizens. As an example, in my business, for the employee, the person that worked for me, I paid 100% of their medical premium for their insurance. Fewer and fewer small businesses are able to do that. Therefore, they're having to change the format, and now you find the business are paying 75%, 80%, or in some instances even 60%, whereby if you were to attempt to offset that by some type of credit, well, then, again, you could move back up to providing 100% of medical care for those individuals that are working. And that's just one thing that I can think of on the top of my head. But I'm certainly a proud proponent for making medical care affordable for all Americans.
Thank you very much for your answer. It's very good. It's obvious that you're thinking carefully about it.
Tim,
can you go ahead?
Yes, sir. Colonel, how are you doing tonight?
David, please forgive me, but before we go to the next question, the young lady that I just spoke to mentioned the fact that they welcome information from other parts of the country and other states where there is political activity. One of the things, if you haven't shared with your listeners, I'd definitely like to let them know that for the first time in Louisiana in nearly 40 years, we're participating in primaries, and specifically closed primaries. We don't normally do that here. Louisiana has historically been an open primary state. And the potentiality is for a poor candidate like myself, there's a possibility I may have to run three times. And what I mean by that is we've got the primary, the possibility of a runoff since there are four Democrats in the race, and then the general election. So that's unique for Louisiana. It's been since the early to mid-70s since we've actually got involved in the closed primary system. Just wanted to share that with you.
Thank you.
Yes. Jim, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yes, Colonel, good evening. You talk a great deal on your website about education, and my question to you about that is, do you believe the No Child Left Behind Act has failed, and if so, why?
Well, I think it's a start. It's better than doing nothing, but certainly that's not the solution. Now, I got to tell you, I'm very big into education, and I've got some very radical ideas about what I think needs to be done. First and foremost, in the area of education, what the federal government can do is provide leadership and some funds. I think most of us know that most public education is primarily a local issue. What we've got to do on the federal level is provide leadership and some funding and the leadership by direction as such. Now, let me just wonder just a little bit, if you allow me. Let me show you how interested my wife and I are in education. I don't know if you're familiar with the Dictionary Project, but the Dictionary Project is an international project that provides a dictionary to students in the elementary grades all over the country. My wife and I sponsor the Dictionary Project in two counties. They're parishes, but you're equivalent of counties in Louisiana. And what that does, it gives us an opportunity to work directly with our schools, our superintendents, and we actually physically put a dictionary in every third grader's hand in the parish. And now, that doesn't necessarily buy us direct involvement, but we are actively involved in the schools. And I think this dramatic and radical change that I'm proposing will take a little while to share with you, so I'm going to try to shorten it. First of all, I don't think that there really is a curriculum problem as much as there is a systemic problem. And all I simply mean by that is we're trying to teach children, and I'm primarily talking about in the urban schools, so forgive me if I don't labor with some of the better schools, because I think there are some progressive things going on in some of the better schools. But in the schools that are failing, we're trying to deal with young people who are not the same kind of young people that most of us were when we went to school. I went to school for an education. Most of these kids don't have that foundation. They're not pushed in that direction. I want to make this very short and succinct. We're going to have to get to the point where, and I say this, the American Civil Liberal Union will probably sue me, but we're going to have to develop a contract with parents and students to make sure that students who are in school to learn are placed in that environment. The ones who are disruptive and their parents are not willing to support the educational process, they're going to have to go into a different track until we find a way to reform their attitude and to bring them in line with what needs to occur to get a good education. The other thing in the urban schools, I call it Track 13 or Advantage 13, is a little deal that I sit down and sketch out one day. We're going to have schools where it's going to be normal for kids who start out behind to graduate high school in 13 years. And it has to be normal so people are not scorned if it takes them 13 years. But in the same school system, we're going to be able to provide that some kids will be able to graduate in 11 years. But what I don't want it to be is some type of stigmatism for the kid that's going to take 13 years. But many of the urban kids start so far behind that even though we try to get them out of school in 12 years, most of them are 18, 19, and I'm ashamed to say some of them nearly 20 years old anyway. So I think we have a systemic problem, and I'll end by saying this. What bears that out for me is in my Sunday school class, I have 80-year-old and nearly 90-year-old students in my Sunday school class that read better and write better than the kids who just graduated from Louisiana High School. So that tells me it's not a curriculum problem. We've got a systemic problem, and we've got the if we just teach these kids reading, writing, and arithmetic, I think we're going to be better off. But in order to do that, you've got to change the school environment, and you've got to change the attitude of the parent and the students. Now, that's kind of radical, and that's not what people want to hear. People want to know, they want to hear testing, and don't get me wrong, testing is the only way that you can measure what you're actually doing. But the problem of education is not as complicated as we like to make it. The biggest concern I have is, will the various entities out there challenge what I'm doing as being too radical and maybe infringing upon parental rights by forcing them to do things that they should be doing anyway and having them to enter into contractual relationship with school districts. So I hope that didn't scare you or shake you too much, but we have a big problem in Louisiana. Fortunately, in the school district that we work in, my wife and I, we're number three in the state. But that's not the norm. The norm is most schools in the state of Louisiana are being threatened with being taken over by the state and being run by the state as opposed to the local parishes or counties in your case.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead,
I want to tell you, Colonel Banks, you must have forgotten to talk about your years as a teacher in your biography, because what you're saying to the average teacher or person that works in the school every day, it's music to our ears. It's not radical at all. It's the core of the solution.
Well, I have taught, but I taught on the college level and the junior college level, but I have all of my sisters are in the school system. One is a paraprofessional or teacher's aide, as they call it. The other is a teacher's aide. And then I have a math teacher that's a sister of mine, and she's been teaching for nearly 30 years. She loves it, but she spends most of her time trying to discipline the kids and very little time actually teaching the subject matter. And unfortunately, when parents come to school, they're not coming to support her. In many instances, they're coming to support the poor behavior of the child. And that's just not what occurred when I was a child in elementary and secondary school.
Yes, it's sad that what the problem is, but it's very refreshing that you understand the problem so well through your relatives, and that's great. Also, I was going to tell you another thing, the Dictionary Project. My son started third grade, and when I went to open house at his school, they gave every student, including him, a dictionary to take home and use for homework, and I bet it's the same exact dictionary in which your project
I'm sure it is, because it is a national project, and they just seek sponsors throughout the country. And it just so happened that God has blessed my wife and I, and we were in a position to sponsor the kids in two parishes or two counties.
Yes, yes. This is a Delta Kappa Gamma. I'm not sure which group that is, but it's Women Educators Dedicated to Excellence. Has a yellow cover with a Francis Bacon quote. I'm sure it's the same one, and that's just interesting.
Yeah, I'm certain that it is.
Yes. Well, I guess you're running in Louisiana 4. For the listeners that aren't familiar with Louisiana maps, tell us where that district is.
Okay, and you can also feel free, again, to check that out on my website. I've done that for the very same reason that you're asking the question. Believe it or not, many of the people in the district don't realize how vast the district is. Look at it thoroughly when you get a chance on my website, but if you're familiar at all with the state of Louisiana, if you look at the entire western side of the state from top to bottom, with the exception of the very bottom parish, which is Calcasieu Parish, and it doesn't mean a lot to you guys, but if you started on the western side of our state, next out the very first county or parish that you would come in touch with and just go up the entire state until you reach the top, that is the Western District of Louisiana. And to take it a step further, when you reach the top, you start going east for another three or four parishes / counties, and you're going to come up with about 13 parishes. And it's vast. Obviously, it's not the largest population-wise, but we're pretty close to being the largest geographically and land-wise with the land mask.
Yes, yes. So, I mean, I guess Shreveport's probably the largest city, or?
That's correct. Shreveport, as a matter of fact, the Shreveport metropolitan area has 48% to 49% of the registered voters right in that metropolitan area.
Okay. Well, I thank you for being on. And if you want to tell the listeners one more time anything they can do to get involved in your campaign or to support you, how can they do that?
Well, certainly. One thing that I've learned as a politician over the last few months, because I did resign my job to do this, use every opportunity that you can to offer people the opportunity to contribute. And certainly you can do that on the website. And one thing that I have learned by having a campaign that's primarily funded by myself, family, friends, and coworkers, that no donation is too small. The members of my church have been donating anything from $5 to $500. So there is no such thing as too small of a donation. And if you have listeners and they feel that they believe that as a congressman, I will support the things that they believe in, certainly I would invite them to join with us, because I'm just one of those people that I feel strongly about certain things, and I'm going to go after them. I definitely feel strongly about party cooperation. If I didn't, I wouldn't run. I don't have any problem. I don't think that any one party has any dominance over the ability to come up with a good bill in Congress. I just don't believe that. We should all be working for the betterment of the country.
Yes. Well, I thank you for coming on, sir.
I enjoyed it. Always enjoy an opportunity to talk. You probably can tell that I am a lawyer. Lawyers welcome the opportunity to spout off. I hope I wasn't too long with it on the answers, but some of the things I really get turned on by, and I'm really excited about seeing if there's any way that I can help education improve.
Oh, no, don't worry at all. We invite guests because we want people to hear other exciting, dynamic people instead of just us spout off about things.
Well, okay, guys, I've enjoyed talking to you. Feel free to email me at my website if you have further questions. I answered those questions on the website myself. I wrote those issues out. It wasn't anything that was developed by a fancy consultant. That's exactly how I feel, and those are the same answers that you'll get from me 50 years from now unless something changes, and they're the answers that I was raised giving.
Yes, sir. Well, thanks again for coming on the Kudzu Vine, Colonel Banks.
You're quite welcome. Good talking to you guys.
Thank you.
Nice.
Yes, we're looking at another district. And once again, Louisiana 4, this is a Republican that's vacated this seat. I know Colonel Banks was looking at running for this seat before the Republican resigned. He was going to run either way. But it's another very doable take-back opportunity. Cleo Fields was the representative before he ran, a Democrat before he ran for governor back a few years ago. And so this is another seat, and that would be two takebacks in 1 year in Louisiana should Louisiana 4 go Democratic. Just very exciting. Catherine, any thoughts on that?
Well, the other I checked out the other candidate, the Republican candidates. I didn't look at all the Democrats, and none of them are very strong. They don't appear to be very dynamic. So, and this guy seems good. The other ones, I'm sure the other Democrats are probably good too. So it should be interesting to see how that shakes out. It certainly looks promising.
Yes, I really even, and I didn't even had never talked to Colonel Banks in so in depth on education, but his background is just very strong in that he has that military, but he has that domestic background of dealing with bankruptcy. And my goodness, looking at the Bush presidency, where are two places he's failed on the military issues, overextending our military, in particular in Iraq, Afghanistan, I think most of us agree with. And then looking at people, you know, no job creation, the home mortgage crisis, and a bankruptcy lawyer deals with these kind of things. So it seems like he's a perfect person to put in to remedy the Bush presidency. But I guess, you know, our hour has gotten late, but it's been a good one. A lot of different things covered, and now we're ready to, at least in Georgia, we've set the table, if you will. Tennessee also had their elections. We didn't get to talk about it as much, but their nominee got 30-something percent of the vote, Bob Tuke, and he won that primary, no runoff, so that's set, and they can, I guess, can look at taking on Lamar Alexander. The Memphis primary, we didn't have a chance to talk about that, but talk about an attack ad backfire. And Nikki Tinker, who seemed like a very credible candidate going into that, just, I guess she threw the long bomb knowing she was going to lose. Now she may have branded herself in a negative way that, you know, any other race, she'll always be known for, you know, calling the guy the defender of the Klan. Tim, any thoughts on that race? I'm sure it kind of made it around being such a notable.
Yeah. You know, I hope it's a deal where that sort of thing just doesn't work this year, David. You can always at least hope that. We say every election, well, you know what? Negative ads are not going to work. Hey, you know what? Maybe this is the year. What do you think?
Wouldn't
yeah,
that be nice?
Well, and that ad just seems so over the top. And,
yeah.
And also the way that fella was filmed, they could have filmed him in a different way in which it looked a little more highbrow, if you will, instead of lowbrow, although I don't think it would have mattered. It's just one of those things where sometimes, you know, you say win at all costs, but you're gonna hurt yourself in the future because you're always going to be known for something like this. And this didn't seem like a Cynthia McKinney kind of candidate, even though this move seemed like that kind of politics. But once again, another great Kudzu Vine. And Tim, go ahead and preview next week's show. You've been the one to secure this. Go ahead and tell us who our featured guest will be.
Yes, we will have someone very highly placed in the Obama campaign in Georgia. We do not know yet if it's the executive director or someone in the communication office, but someone from the Obama for Georgia campaign will be on with us, and we're really excited about that.
Exciting. And then, Catherine, you've been talking about our other guest. Apparently a caravan of folks are going to the convention. Tell us a little more about these folks.
Yeah, the what are they calling themselves these days? The well, it was the Hillary Rapid Express, but now I think they're doing voter registration in an RV on the way to Denver. They're leaving next Sunday. They're Hillary delegates, but they're, you know, of course they're supporting Barack Obama, and I think at least one of them may be working for Barack Obama.
Yeah.
So, and they're leaving next Sunday, so they're going to call in from the road and fill us in on how they're doing.
So I guess the first half hour we'll look at the Obama campaign officials, and the second half hour we'll look at the Hillary Express. And if y'all will do all the booking, it sounds like y'all got it taken care of. I'll take the week. Actually, what I'll do is I'll start working on the next week, but somewhat take the week off.
Okay.
But,
you got to be here. You can't take the week off.
Just from the booking, not from the actual show. I don't know if y'all figured this out. The booking sometimes is more work than the show.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure of that.
But once again, great show, and talk to y'all next week.
Thank you.
All right, good night.
Good night.